Okay, let's start with our opening prayer. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother.
Dearest Mother.
Beloved David.
Beloved David.
Saints and sages of all religions.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
My Bible reading this morning, from John 6, 27. Labor not for the meat which perish, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you for him, give unto you. For him hath God the Father sealed. And from Psalm 3, verse 3. But thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory, and the lifter up of mine head. So God is a shield for sure, and all that he's done to keep us shielded. I like to think in terms of angels, because there seems to be in the Hindu pantheon a lot of ideas of devas and people on the higher planes who are basically deeply interested in this realm, and they, many of them, come here and have karmic patterns here, or are come to be saviors and help us here. But they also, in the other realm, are watching. Some are. The astral realm is so much bigger than the physical realm that it's beyond imagining. Only things that are the only things that are manifested in the physical realm, first of all, they all come from the astral plane, so the people who created them, they already imagined them and were gone to the trouble to design how things function here. And then when they become manifested through the will of God, through our own will, because we are part of this, then they come into physical manifestation here. But we are constantly being monitored, and we are monitored also in the causal plane, which Master talks about there being three planes that are part of existence. And beyond that is God himself. So in the way of thinking, there's a duality of that which is just God. And Mother talked about it being the beyond the, she called it going over the top, and then the realm you're in is just pure God, pure existence, without time, without space. But in the body, as with the God who created this world, he did it in such a way that there's a mysterious level called the causal plane, which is very much unseen here and unknown, but it's the place from which ideas come and the ideas for the lower planes. In the astral plane, the world is imagined and designed and then structures created and caused to be manifest here. The physical plane initially is just literally one atom, and then it starts to grow from there, many atoms. And the atom, which I've talked about many times before, is that which the Greeks were also talking about when they coined that term atom. And so it's much smaller than the atom that we know. But of course, I do admire the physicists, because they've discovered something that chemistry can tell us is real. And yet it is, and they call it an atom, but it is... and it's beyond visible form, for sure, much, much beyond which we can see with our eyes or in the visible light, but which we have other means by which we know about it. So the atom is basically the coalescing point for each one of our identities also. So we can think in terms of the idea of an atom, and then we can think, once the idea is designed and put into place and manifested, then we can have many, many atoms. And then these atoms in the physical plane play are part of the physical structure, rocks, mountains, everything. Within time, Meher Baba, who Mother liked a lot, claims that all will evolve from gross matter to just divine matter in the final level, in the eventual evolution. And so the notion of space and time are critical here to understand why we are not seeing ourselves as God. We are actually put into manifestation here with a body. And then the atom, which is representing ourselves, is placed in the place in, on the earth, that inside a body. And the body's been constructed of other atoms, but they're not the same kind of atoms that are associated with the self. If we go deep enough, they are essentially the same, but there's a coating, or what's called koshas, or sheaths around it. And human beings have most of these sheaths revealed, or taken, opened. And then so the final steps we have to go through are just to attain the divine. So man is the highest, according to Sri Yukteswar and the biblical teachings too, but man is the highest evolutionary state, and it was what was intended. If Meher Baba is to be correctly understood, he talked mysteriously, but he said the intended result of this physical realm was that man would have a place to be here, in which the divine state can be manifested also. So that's what we're all about. We're all here, all of the manifest parts of this physical universe, just to slowly transform all of the universe into consciousness. And man will plays a role now. And once we get to the point where man can find a place like we have on the earth, and these are rare places on the physical universe, it's so large, but we have a duty here. And when in the Bible it says, you have dominion over all the animals and all of the things on the earth. That's what's really talking about. Man has already been through those states. He's evolved. That which we are has evolved. And Mother talked about it being from a raindrop, from a drop on a leaf, where the consciousness is first known. and then there's an evolutionary, for the consciousness, there's an evolutionary progression. So we are the recipients, Barb, or we have been chosen to be the manifestation that can be conscious here and become divine, to be the vanguard for all things to become divine. Now, essentially, we are already that, but we have had a coating put over us, and we're placed in jars, as Master used to explain it, three bodily jars, physical, astral, and causal. We break out of the physical body, and that is a difficult thing, and Kundalini is necessary for that. And it is manifested or shown in the Christian teachings to be the crucifixion of Jesus is represented. When he's at the heart center and the Gordian knot center, that all those terminologies are the same. This is what the Hindus call the fourth chakra. And it is difficult to break through that, to bring the spinal energy up through that fourth center and into the higher centers, from which you can then apprehend the more divine states. So the so the story has to do with bringing man through these different centers and attaining full realization. That occurs once you've broken through the sixth center. So just to be clear, Mother always taught that your bodily forced, focused, held within the lower chakras, you have more animal kind of notions about how things work. And then you have this crucifixion experience, this Kundalini moves through with force, great force, and it varies depending on what you've done in other lifetimes. And it breaks through at the heart center. And the Gordian knot is an old idea, it's Greek, and it's the idea of a knotted area that's a chakra, and that the energy can't pass through there, or it can't pass through very easily. And so once you break that, then you have full access to the astral world and the astral ideas and higher levels of knowledge also. Then you go through the fifth chakra is in the throat. And that is, there's a positive and negative. You can feel these centers if you concentrate on it. And if you focus on the spine, and you can feel there's a positive on the sternum for the heart chakra, for instance, and then a negative one directly opposite. And then the throat chakra, it's right at the, not sure exactly which of the vertebrae it is, but it's right at the center of the throat, is from where and what you feel like you're speaking from. And then there's one on the spine also, so there's a forward and back. And now also, so we all, most of Mother's disciples know that Mother's idea of the 12 apostles was that those were the plus and minus, the positive and negative aspects of each chakra. So there's six chakras, there are 12 apostles, but anyway, to continue. So then the astral, breaking from the astral to the causal plane is going through the fifth chakra, and then you enter into the causal plane. You're still embodied, you're still restricted, but you're much higher attuned. And then the final one is the crucifixion. Now, in Christian scripture, it's called the Hill of Golgotha. The Golgotha is the hill of the skull. And the final realization occurs through the breaking through the Kundalini pressure, forcing its way through the sixth chakra. The sixth chakra is the medulla oblongata, is the negative, and the positive is the point between the eyebrows. Sometimes it's referred in Hinduism as the root of the nose. And once you break through that, you're fully realized. Then your mother always said that you have much to go through after that, if you still stay embodied anyway. And so there's much that happens, but you have complete control of all the lower worlds and complete control of yourself. You are literally a master of that realm. And it's called Beyond the Beyond by Meher Baba. But those souls who live in and come back to this realm and stay in this realm and teach, like Mother and Meher Baba, Sri Yukteswar Master, there's many others, Sai Baba, Shirley, Sri Ramakrishna, but and many Christian saints too, Saint Francis definitely was one. Padre Pio, perhaps. And these are difficult things to know. And we don't get to know people who go through that final one because it's become so impossible to track them and to really know. But the self is still just the same self. The difficulty in understanding this is that we can have the many and we can have the one. And so now Papa tells us that we have the world that's continuously existing. We always think in terms of time, but in reality, time is a tool. It's a creation of God. He lives in a place, in a way of thinking that doesn't require time, but he knows about time. We needn't worry about, you know, we will gain realization. And we have to just go through these things. Now, some of these things we have to go through, we've chosen ourselves, or things that we've caused to trouble with others. But it's still, we're all basically the same. Basically the same self. And when you root, when you go back deep enough, and so I know I'm using a lot of different people's names. The Ramana Maharshi's teaching was that you should learn, who am I? He used to say that. That takes you back to a single self. It takes you back, takes you within yourself, and then you see the pristine self, the Father, God the Father, and you realize not just that he's there as a creator, but he is also manifested as his own creation. And then you can see that this is all one. It's all an idea of God. It's not real in the sense that we mean real by God. Things that are real are beyond time and space. They're beyond manifestation. And so we think of it in terms of the void. And the void is a way of talking. We always think of it as being empty. But the void also is the sense of it. The people who have been there talk about this. The void is a notion of God in his pristine form, meaning there's no contrasting elements. You can't see anything, you can't feel anything in the sense of the five senses especially. And you only have existence itself. And that is a rich state. It's not a dead state. One thing I've mentioned many times is that supposedly the seraphims are the highest angels, and they sit around the throne of God and say, holy, holy, holy. And we also have the idea of going to heaven as being with a harp and sitting up on clouds. And those, you know, ideas are there because they cause the man under chaotic states to feel that there is a place of peace. There is a place of Jerusalem, you know, the idea that you have attained this. But in reality, God is constantly existing and therefore constantly creating. It is his nature. So that's the complicated part of the story. But the idea that there are people involved in forming the body, that are involved in the formation of DNA here in the physical realm. Mother always said the missing link is not on the physical plane. You won't find it here. It happens in the astral plane where the designs are being hybridized and discussed. She's discussed amongst the scientists of that realm. These are just terms. But there are elements, and there are angelic beings who constantly travel between these planes and monitor things here. We are all protected. We wouldn't be here if we weren't. We are not alone. We are under the illusion that we are in the physical world. It's a kind of enchantment the Hindus call Maya. And the enchantment is something that we wished to participate in, or we wouldn't be here. We willingly take on the limitations of the body to experience this. This is all supposed to be Ananda. That's all. Everything is built from here. Everything in the causal, is astral and the physical, is Ananda, is bliss. And bliss is defined differently by the great masters than just joy or something like that. It has those elements. Mostly those elements hit you very strongly when you transition to it. When you come from this chaotic world, the frenetic world, and move into higher planes, always the feeling is of bliss. And so as we move towards our source, we know then, oh, it's always been bliss. What we have to do here is to find bliss in the realm that we exist in. We have to see that bliss is our inherent nature. Now, Papa warns us that bliss is unique. in the words that we use, because it has no opposite. It's not dual. We have misunderstood it to be joy and pain, duality. It's not true. And so it is a difficult thing to understand, and I'm not claiming to fully apprehend it, fully understand what he's saying, but it is a pointer to understanding how Papa could stand and say, the world is exactly as it should be. It's exactly the way it's supposed to be. Jerry has this, David and me have something, a writing, you can remind me, Jerry, but that a man was talking about his father praying. I think he was a preacher. And his father always prayed in a hectoring manner, as though he was a dissatisfied guest at a poorly run hotel. So, you know, this is the way we all feel about this realm sometimes. But it is the task set to us is to find that we are nothing but bliss, and to find that realm here. That's real realization. It isn't realization to spend our lives in different realms here, which we can do at different levels, different universes, different galaxies. These are all things of interest to the finite mind. And they are interesting, and God will put us through them. We have our own destinies, each one of us, to do these things. There's not going to be an ending. It never ends. This is part of the fear of the void, is that there is no ceasing of existence. There can be ceasing of chaos and troubles, and you can have times of rest. God is always moving. There's an element of God, I should say, that's always moving. And there's always a place you can go to for peace. So when these great masters sit in our presence and they teach from that level that Mother used to talk from, she's sitting in that place of peace with clear understanding and clear vision right down into the physical realm and the rooms that we lived in at the time we knew her, and other masters too. So they do us a great service when they come from that peaceful place, that point of that we really want to get back to. Many souls don't want to get back to that. They want chaos. And their mother always defined these many souls coming out from God and many souls going back, and that the opposition force that occurs between this, the forces going out and the forces going back, is where we get energy, but also so much ideas of satanic forces and evil forces. She said that the evil forces as individuals are not real. They are simply only from our mind. But it shows the power of our mind that we can. You know, Padre Pio used to have devils, devilkins, or, you know, what did he call them? There's a term for them. Anyway, beings who were beating him up. There's other Catholic priests. Catholics like the kind of more grisly nature of the whole process. That's why the Catholics always want to have a crucifix with the cross, with Jesus hanging on the cross by nails. And the Protestants, they just want to have the cross. They're happy with that. But the idea that you can be beat up by forces like that, it just shows the power of the mind. It doesn't show real forces that we have to worry about. But we do have to have a sanctuary. And that's what religion is all about, is a place to go that we've been taught to learn to know within ourselves that we are being protected. And when we feel unprotected, we have a place to withdraw to. And in our teachings, the most important thing is to go to the spine. Mother said, this is the path of the spine and the brain, and that this is where we retract to. You can take even painful parts of your body, and you can draw a line from any painful part of your body to your spine, the closest connection to the spine that you can imagine. And you can then take that energy up the spine and control it. And these are things you have to practice. You can get better at it. But anyway, most important thing is to gain, you know, psychological comfort and peace, because we can endure a lot of pain and suffering if it's seen from a perspective that it is our duty or our destiny to do these things. We feel so alone many times. We don't feel as though there's any destiny notion. It's just being out on the end of a limb, completely alone, and that there's nobody knows we're here. And it's part of what we need to see here to gain appreciation for how this realm actually works. But these are, of course, hellish experiences. And the Kundalini will take you through many such experiences. You know, I've always loved the notion that when the chrysalis or the whatever is forming a butterfly, that the chrysalis form is necessary to constrain the butterfly so that as it struggles, the struggle itself floods the fluids of the veins and all that into the parts of the wings. And if you break the chrysalis too soon, the butterfly can't fly. And you need to go through that. But you do feel very alone and constricted and embalmed sometimes. But it is necessary to gain the next. And what you gain from that is the ability to fly in the butterfly analogy. And similar to that is, and you can do this, it is possible for us to have this experience while still in the body. It's not always that your body dies. But for many souls, of course, if they're only coming down here to finish their last lifetime, they do die right afterwards. They don't need to be, they're done with all their physical karma. Their body is the manifestation or the actual proof of their karma. And once you can break through all the elements of the spine and the chakras, the body is no longer needed and it's discarded. But there's much going on here the rest of the time. All of us are divine. There's much of interest here for the people who are protecting us and the souls that have gone either before us or the angelic souls, which are said to be people who, Mother said, even they have to come to the physical realm at least once. So we always are taught that we have to go through maybe millions, thousands or millions of lifetimes. I don't know. Doesn't really matter. But that there are different functions in this great edifice of reality that God has created to amuse himself. And that these elements are always angelic, always connected to God. But they have to come down here too. And that's why they have compassion for us. It's their idea. The astral beings, it's their idea. Souls are sent down into being, into the manifestation. So you can think, see, I've been thinking about this a lot. We've been going through the holy science in the last few Wednesday services, and so this has been on my mind a lot lately, struggling with the teachings and on regards to it. So if anybody has any thoughts, please feel free to talk.
The science is I just got a copy from Great Britain. I got a copy and I read the first all pages and it's complicated.
Yeah. Yeah, the introduction, if that's what you read, is complicated also. But if you read the main text too, both are very complicated. So what we just went through last Wednesday was chapter 2, which if you read that by itself, it's basically Mother's, Papa's, and Master's teachings. It's really quite, yeah, it's quite amazing. Whereas the first chapter is to show the structure that there are. And again, these are things for, you know, the more yoni path, the path of wisdom. There's many people prefer that path. Most people prefer the bhakti path, devotional path. It seems to get people further and not to get encumbered by it. But there is a structure to the universe and there's people who know about it and there's some of us are interested in it, so that part. But that first chapter is really, really difficult and it takes years and even then you really have to have realization to really know what is going on. You really have to, these are guide paths for those going through these states. And when you have a vision of things that's muddled in your head, in your mind, you often can go to the teaching and the structures of what we're being taught here and see that, oh, I see now why that looks that way. But I would recommend that you not think you have to understand, of course, yeah, I know you know that, but others too, that they have to go through this. But it's a place of reference to know. I think it's important for Sri Yukteswar's book, for people to know generally what it is, and that it is a place that you can send people who are... That's not me, though. That's a phone, isn't it? You're saying my internet connection is unstable. That's me. The other realms, the other realms
just called us.
That sounds astral. A little astral sound to it.
Sounds like celestial music. Yeah.
Why did Babaji say why he wanted Sri Yukteswar to write that book?
I think it's to address the Western mind. That's what's in the book, you know. The Western mind wants to know this stuff. Sri Yukteswar was somebody who knew it in depth, and he had studied it all his life. Okay. He went to Puri just to study around these great scholars astrologers and astronomers and cosmologists there.
So he was of that type of person.
That's right. He was, as Master called him, an avatar of wisdom, a Yanavatar. And that there in the Western mind needed that to gain access. Some people needed that to even start to believe in it. Now, most of us move into the bhakti path very easily once we get convinced it's worth doing. Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? What does that word mean?
It means devotion. So it's chanting, loving God, learning what I think the Christian's idea of a personal God, the idea that they, you know, bring that into their, they focus on that, really a good teaching, because you go directly to God and you develop a personal relationship. Now, what does personal relationship mean? It's really quite complicated, because God is not a he or a she, but, and that's what we use for personal. We use a he or she to it. If we call it an it, we would never think that as being elevated. So we have to assume he's at least equal to us as an entity. So we want to develop, but that we can also have that relationship with God shouldn't surprise us, since we also are coming, all those impulses within ourselves on that realm, on that level, come from God. And that's a small, our love of somebody else, our love of humanity, that's a small part of what his personality is, not just his love. It manifests his love.
And when Larry talked about Yani, that's the path of knowledge and the path of the intellect. So there's different ways of approaching God, and that's the one of the intellect, and then the bhakti is the one of the heart of loving God.
Yeah, good way to put it on that. There you go. Thank you.
And it's, you know, there's the word we have is a Gnostic or agnostic. That's the same word, actually. In fact, it's interesting. In India, it's J-N-A-N. And a Yani is a person. Yana is the subject. And then in the West, we have this notion of gnosis, which is knowledge. And it's the way we know it is agnostic, meaning without knowledge. Without knowledge of what? Of God.
Okay.
They say, there is no God, so I can't have any knowledge of it. Or you could just say more of an... Well, agnostic is not an atheist, is it, by definition? To say I don't have the knowledge. Mm-hmm. Who was the famous philosopher who said God just didn't? What happens if you go to heaven and you find out there is a God? He, what would you say to God? And the philosopher said, "Well, I would just tell him I didn't have enough evidence. I've been glad to believe in you, but it just wasn't enough evidence."
Maybe he didn't do the work.
What's that?
Maybe they didn't do the work.
Yeah, that's what we would say, because we have the notion that you can do yoga, you can do meditation, you can pray, and you can get there. But because it's difficult, people don't want it. And even then, you know, most of this stuff is instilled by God. Almost everybody who has great faith in God has an experience they point to. They had some revelatory experience. Everyone says, no, it's the Bible. In the Western world, no, that's not. The Bible is turned to after you have the experience, in my opinion. And the people who are really devout Christians, they've had an experience. Otherwise, you just can't buy into it.
Yeah. Papa was talking about that today. on the daily.
Oh, the from Papa?
Yeah.
Papa of the day?
Yeah, he was just talking about that.
You remind me, I just read it this morning, too.
I didn't read it. I listened to it, too. But he was saying that he wasn't expecting people to know certain things until they had the experience.
I see. Yeah. I mean, isn't that kind of flips it on his head? You know, we're taught in Sunday school.
Yeah,
that you learn the catechism, you learn the Bible, you learn all these things, and then, you know, God will be revealed. Now, of course, that's true. It's good teaching for kids. But it isn't until they go out in the world and have trouble and God saves them in some way or something else triggers it. You know, and then you can turn to what you were taught. You know, it's awfully clear that people say, well, Jesus came to me, and that's why I know Jesus is the only one. No, what you know is you had the experience. That's what you know. And then you turn to your background to do you an explanation. So if you're born in India, you're not going to come up with Jesus as a person you're going to turn to. You're going to turn to Krishna or Rama. And you, but that makes Christians mad when you point this out to them. But it does seem kind of, oh, I got power. Is this uncle? Sorry. It's going to fade.
Is it
there
it goes.
Oh, thank you. Very good.
So, Larry, one thing that...
Go ahead.
...just struck me for some reason. You said the astral plane is much, much larger than the physical plane. Now, I'm sure I've heard this before, but for some reason that just struck me. Can you just talk about that a bit more?
Well, the things that are manifest are a subset of what's possible, because the astral plane represents all the implementation of all the ideas that come from the causal realm. And so the notion of the causal realm, these are all just ways of talking about it. Who knows? In reality, the notion that Mother and David and I used to talk about, and all the people who talked about these things with Mother, was that, you know, the causal beings are perfectly happy within themselves. They don't need to, but they have the godlike powers. Each one can create their own universe. But and we're just one of the many universes. And these are all just notions. We just don't know. But the idea is that there's many more causal things as ideas that get implemented in the astral plane, which takes a certain amount of energy and focus and individuals to do it. So there's a limitation on what you can do. And then in the physical plane, there's a limitation on what you can manifest, that you can, yeah, manifest is the right word. So there's a limitation on what you can manifest. Now, it may not be true. Maybe everything is manifestable and there's nothing that doesn't exist. But each of us have a physical, an astral, and a causal aspect into the physical part of our body, but in our consciousness as well. So these are ways of explaining things that are unexplainable. And so, but I, you know, they do give us a structure to talk about it. But to answer your direct question, this is the way I understand from what Mother said. The astral plane is so vast we can't even, you know, imagine it. I think in Sri Yukteswar too, he mentions that the gross plane is like a small, what's it called? The basket that's underneath a big balloon floating in the air. So the physical plane is just a small little part of the astral, and the astral plane is represented by the large spherical weight. What's the word I'm looking for? These balloons, you know, hot air balloons. So the hot air balloon represents the astral plane, and then the basket hung down below it represents the physical. And so that's always been the teaching, so I've always assumed, and I think it's right, that the astral plane, not everything gets to be manifested. There are ideas played with, like drawings on a board. It's like the architect or an engineer drawing ideas and having different ideas and then pencil in this idea, make a change and come to the final design. That gets pushed down into to manifest in the physical plane. But the ideas are coming from his boss in the
car. It's actually the get in the balloon. In what I'm thinking is that the balloon is actually exponentially bigger than what the basket, the ratio of the size is actually.
Agreed. Yeah, that's exactly what I
understand.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, exactly.
And so I'm, yeah, my mind is just wrapping around that.
Right.
And one thing David said was, you know, I would always see or feel God through, you know, nature, through like a sunset. And David would it's just a tiny slice of, you know, of God. It's just a tiny, tiny slice.
Right. But
Jill, were you gonna?
That tiny slice is one with God. So everything that God knows, you can know. But what does knowing mean too? But you know, Mother always said that God finally explained to her how he could know that when every sparrow falls, or how many, you know, hairs are numbered on your head. But the sparrow falling, I've always loved what Mother said there. She said that God told her that, of course I know when every sparrow falls, I am there. I am dying. I am the one falling. So of course I know. So yes, these ideas make us feel either alone or far away from God, and yet he's right within us. All of this is coexisting. There is no such thing as space, no such thing as time. These are things that we've imposed on our minds to have the experience here that we want to have. And it's marvelous. As God said in Genesis, it is good. But he still had trouble himself, didn't he?
I have a client who has autism, and he's always talking about a planet. He's into science fiction and writes science fiction books, but this explains a lot, because I'm thinking he talks about a planet that's 500 times larger than the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So he's getting the information from there.
See, we don't know what this... There's so much about the astral plane that intrudes into this plane. So we don't know that these aren't ideas being expressed in the astral plane, and he's getting knowledge of something that already is manifest or is being disconsidered. It's complicated.
Or that he's channeling.
Or that, yeah, he might well be really deeply involved. Especially autistic people, they're often the I've always thought of them as the mechanics when they're in the astral plane. They're the mechanics doing the you know, implementing the changes. Mother says the missing link is in the astral plane. There's people, you know, they designed DNA. They know how DNA works. And if you want to do another evolutionary step, it happens there. And so these kind of, and they often show up as autistic people here. I really think that, yes.
Wow.
Yeah, this makes sense, doesn't it?
I have a friend that's never had any musical lesson his whole life. And he plays the piano, yeah. You hear it, it's celestial, and he doesn't even really know what he's doing.
Well, the whole world of jazz, they don't have any music.
Yeah, like, I'm a musician, I mean, I've done the work, but he just plays the piano, and he used to be able to go into the Oak Bay Hotel here, and they let him play because, you know, it was just celestial.
I had a friend like that, too.
Yeah. I've known a few.
And he learned on an organ, in my example. But in India, they often just are always riffing.
Sure,
they're not
sure.
Doing.
No, I get that. Yeah.
The marvelous
and
thing about
you can build something out of that too.
There's so much love for opera, though, in the other world now. Japan's nuts over opera.
Yeah.
And so what we've done here with scores and everything is also magical and wonderful. Both are really.
Yeah, it's two different.
It's all the same thing, but it functions differently. Yeah.
The other ones, you know, just like theoretically, you build on. Right?
Yeah.
And the other ones are just like it's celestial. Like he.
Yeah.
You just, you know, he doesn't know what he's doing.
I know.
You know, of course you would.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you a musician yourself?
No.
I love that music that you play.
That bass you play.
Oh, that's Angela Gheorghiu. She's one of the most famous opera singers in the world. She's Romanian, so she went back home and put together a thing. I think it's called Mysterium Crucis or... No, that's another one. Anyway, it's about the
mysterium. Oh, what did Angela use
that? Mysterium, something like the sacred music, or yeah. I'm not sure, it's Mysterium. Mysterium Crucis is another one, because Dave and I got into that, beautiful too. But Angela Gheorghiu is the person. And so that's her singing there. But these are, I don't know where these tones, I don't even know, I've had this particular one, I've seen a translation of it, I can't remember what it's about, but these are all spiritual. And it's celestial music.
It's
really
like
wonderful.
Like Gregorian chants.
Yeah, which we all love.
That's amazing.
Even though Gregorian chants are so constrained by rules, they still produce absolutely amazing
Yeah, I suppose they didn't. Yeah, I mean, I don't know that much.
They don't want any devil's cords and all that. You know, they're very restricted.
Well, that's an interesting point.
Yeah,
of view.
Yeah.
That's an interesting.
They don't like any like jazz. They don't like jazz or discord and things.
Yeah, that's an interesting point of view though when you say devil's cords. But yeah. I don't know. Define a devil's cord.
Well, the Western music has just said we're going to move into discordant and back out and have resolution. Gerald.
Yes,
what was it?
Well, no, I opened my fridge this morning. The light was out. I closed the door and checked the plug and plugged it around a little bit and then opened it again. It was on. Stay cool. How'd that happen?
The storm is
Is that Yuktaswar book hard to get?
By the way, I'll send you a copy that Mother had a 1949 version of it that we've duplicated in a print in a PDF.
Okay.
So you'd like to have it. It's fairly thin, so it's
sure.
Yeah, you're welcome to have it. But yeah, it's fairly easy to get.
There's a chapter in the Gita that explains the relationship between energy and matter and spirit. And it's like physics. Like, well,
yeah.
It's like pure physics. I find it very interesting.
The Gita really is, the whole Mahabharata is just crazy. There's so much allegory. Do you know the different elements, for instance, that Masters talks about? Bhishma, who's I think he's the first person born and he can't be killed and all that. He represents the ego. In the Christian, it's Jesus dying on his body, dying
right,
on the cross.
Right.
And then, Bhima is the heart center. So there's a whole explanation of the Kundalini and the spinal centers there.
Yeah,
Jesus.
I found your explanation quite fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Actually.
Yeah.
And it really parallels with the Taoism. Like a lot of things parallel with the Taoism.
These are all the same.
Go into the physical realms. You have made a divine sport, but you pass through the veil of forgetting. And
right.
So you forget
right.
that you have
that's exactly,
in there. Right?
That's a perfect way to explain it.
And then the realm of potential is the next realm that the Taoists talk about.
That's another
so,
great word.
And then the
yeah.
causal is beyond that.
Yeah.
So that's
Well, I mean, all these religions are at the high levels. If they're, great religions, they usually have a mythology associated with it. And you really have to dig into that to find out. So what was interesting about Sri Yukti's was he was comparing, New Testament mostly, as far as I know, those things that are kind of complicated in the New Testament and showing that they have exact parallels
in the
Sankhya
form.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, we'll have to get a hold of that.
And you'll find the introduction really interesting because he revisits the notion of the yugas in the introduction. And that's caused the whole branches of the yoga masters group, masters disciples, huge blocks that I've gone into trying to find out to prove what he's saying about the precession of the equinoxes being the cause of the yugas, all that kind of stuff. It's very, very interesting.
He identified some mistakes as well, too, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Very interesting. So that's complicated to sell that story, but the present day history, the present day teachings of the Hindus in India, they teach a different yoga, a different yuga cycle that's vastly like millions of years. The Sri Yukteswar said, no, they misunderstood. They misunderstood what happened when they went from the Kali to the Dwapara to the Kali Yuga, 700 BC. At that point, the king then decamped, took all of his court astrologers with him. And so the people who were living at that time took the date of the beginning of the yuga to be of the Kali Yuga to be the beginning of the dates that they were already using. So it's really crazy.
So cool.
Because and there's a lot of people who are really opposed to him for saying this. But in India, they expect differences of opinion. They don't have to go and kill everybody. Although that does happen. It's not to say that any difference. It happens in India too, of course. But they've had so many overlays of great cultures on one on top of another that there's more tolerance.
So I'm wondering about my coffee. Do you think it might be authentic or not?
Well, I haven't. There's only one mistake that we know about that was made, and it was only on certain editions of the Holy Science. And it has to do with just a simple thing. They say that God created the universe. And Sri Yukteswar said God creates. And that's a crucial difference, especially with his teachings. This is ongoing. This is going on all the time.
Oh, okay.
They have this notion that happened in the past. Because that's the way our mind thinks. And it was probably just someone thought, well, that must not be right.
Right.
So they put created. And then that was fixed, though, in the next edition.
Okay, we found. I'll look for that.
But yeah, I think you can at least look at this 1949 version. Okay. Now we have a 19, if you guys are interested, please write to me. I'll send you the 1920 version, which is just photocopies. That's, and then it's made into JPEGs, page after page. It's
sure.
almost identical to the 1949, which is a PDF, and it's printable. And
yeah, so like a physical version.
Yeah.
I like what.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
Back to and stuff.
You'll enjoy it. Well, the PDF will print right up as a booklet, so yeah, you'll like that.
Nice.
I like your use of the word enchantment.
So since you're talking about the holy signs, I thought I had a copy, but I...
Oh, I'll send you a copy. Just ask me. Yeah, send me an email. I'll send you a copy. Kate did
okay, send me a
huge
copy.
Review of it, so it's all... It's almost... It should be word for word correct, or...
The original with the...
Yeah, literally page...
Like
yeah.
said, oh, here's a mistake, I'll change it. It was just looking to see which...
Missing the word
exactly,
the.
If it was exactly yeah. the
Thank
same.
Thank you so much.
Anyway, sorry, Jerry was just about to say something. I'm sorry if we're not able to hear our microphone very well.
I had a... So.
Okay.
I had a copy for a long time. I think Travis lent it to me.
Okay.
And,
well, Jerry's speaking now, Michelle.
I should read it. And then I just returned it to him.
Michelle, Jerry's speaking right now. I'm sorry the microphone's so bad here. It's hard to tell when the group's speaking. And go ahead.
I just like the way you use the word enchantment for Maya.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that before, and it's a good word to use.
Well, I'm trying to figure out how Papa was thinking when he said what he said, because we're all confused. That's just the thing that triggered Swami Satchitananda to become his disciple was... Papa said, he read that Papa said the world is exactly the way it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he'd just gone through World War II.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
in Burma. Yeah. And he didn't think the world looked like it was very well thought out. So Jerry was just saying about the idea of enchantment versus Maya. And Maya has and darkness and all the associated negative aspects. But if Papa is right, then that the world is exactly the way it's supposed to be, and we have this idea of Ananda, which is what the world is created from, being bliss, it must be more of an enchantment than it is. The problem with enchantments is it takes people place with Hansel and Gretel level kind of stuff. You know? It's pretty dire. Pretty
Sometimes you
dark.
Feel like that. Yeah.
But it reflects the magnetism of it.